Support for KCRW.com comes from the Master of Arts in Organizational Management program at Antioch University, Los Angeles, an MBA alternative offering a professional humanistic education for leaders, managers, consultants, and entrepreneurs.
I'm Warren Alney. Recent revelations about government agencies collecting masses of personal data have confirmed what many internet users said they already knew. Is it time for concern about privacy? Is it too late for the public debate that might have been held 10 years ago? That's later on To the Point. First, this story. The nuclear power reactors at San Onofre generated electricity off and on for 40 years until they were shut down a year ago because of leakage from a tube for radioactive steam. It turned out that hundreds of such tubes were wearing out unexpectedly fast. Repair would be very expensive and require a lengthy hearing process with an uncertain outcome. Last Friday, Southern California Edison announced it would close the entire plant permanently. Stephen Conroy is the company's communications director. Mr. Conroy, good to have you on our program.
Thank you, Warren.
I think what everybody in Southern California wants to know is where will the replacement energy come from?
Well, that's one of the focus areas of the Southern California Edison as well as state officials. Part of the announcement last week, Warren, was to highlight the fact that the loss of San Onofre, 2,000 megawatts of power that serves nearly 1.4 million customers here in the Southland, as well as San Diego County, is will need to be replaced. And that'll be one of the near-term things we'll focus on, as well as the California Public Utility Commission, the California Energy Commission, communities, and elected officials at the state and local level. So it'll be a process that we'll need to get underway shortly in order to secure a long-term, reliable energy future here in the Southland and California as a whole.
Does such a thing exist?
Well, I think there does. I mean, I believe that one of the things that will need to be focused on is what is the right mix of generation, new generation, along with transmission lines. Transmission lines are the tentacles, if you will, to new power plants, and they need to be developed along with new sources of generation going forward. And certainly that will include natural gas-fired plants, along with the mix, energy mix of renewable power, which is also very much part of the California energy landscape.
Will there be coal-fired plants involved as well?
Well, coal power plants and equally so nuclear plants are both legislatively not possible in the state of California, so I would not imagine they would be part of the energy picture, at least built in California. Neighboring states, that might be something that might be looked at, but that would be up to those states to decide that.
Was the company concerned that it just wasn't going to make it through the Nuclear Regulatory Commission process to get the plant started again?
Well, the principal reason for the announcement last week that we outlined was the continuing uncertainty around the future of the plant. And yes, the approval process, particularly how long that process might continue to be. The near term, as we announced, we had thought we would be able to seek and as well as gain regulatory approval to restart Unit 2. We submitted those plans to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in October, and there was a clear cost advantage of doing that. But over time, the length and the uncertainty of getting a decision, the economics going toward the end of this year, just were not going to be there. Hence the decision to make this announcement last week to close down San Onofre.
Edison is in dispute with Mitsubishi, which has supplied the new generators for the plant, about why they didn't work the way they were supposed to. There are investigations ongoing by the PUC, the NRC. Senator Boxer wants to see the Justice Department investigate. Is it just not economical anymore to do atomic power?
Well, I think that's a question that a lot of people we'll need to look at and wrestle with. I mean, at this point in time for us, our decision was made because of the uncertainty with getting a decision. And I think that's what drove us, obviously, to what was announced last week. I think that the nuclear power represents 20% of the nation's power mix. It is a vital and important component of that. And how that plays out over time will certainly be something that will be discussed not only here, probably in California, but also across the nation.
Only one plant left in California. Was political opposition one of the issues?
Well, you know, there was a lot of hand-wringing that took place over the course of the plant coming offline. You know, and I don't know that it does as much good to look back at what, you know, all the various elements of that. I do know that what we're focused on now is how we are going to continue to provide reliable service to our customers going forward, and obviously what that might look like will be the mix of new generation, transmission, renewable power, demand response programs where customers reduce their usage for credits, if you will, on their bills. So there's a lot of things that will need to be discussed and decided in order to ensure a safe and reliable grid here in the state of California.
Will ratepayers be asked to pay for the new energy that you're talking about, for the issues that have to be still cleaned up, and for the decommissioning, which could take 50 years?
Well, try to go through those questions one at a time. One of the things that's really focused right now is there are proceedings before the California Public Utility Commission over the San Onofre plant and the cost, both what has not been collected and all the other costs that have been associated with the plant since it's been closed. Those proceedings are underway. They will continue for well into next year. Those decisions will certainly, when decided, will have varying degrees of impact, obviously, on customer rates, but it's undecided, and I think I'll leave it at that, Warren. We don't know enough at this point in time until we get through those proceedings.
All right, Stephen Conroy, Communications Director with Southern California Edison. I know you don't want to interact with our other guests. Thank you very much for being on our program.
Thank you very much, Warren, for your time. Really appreciate it.
Okay. Morgan Lee is Energy and Green Business Reporter at the UT in San Diego. Morgan Lee, good to have you on our program.
Thanks for having me.
What are some of the things we didn't hear from Stephen Conroy of Southern California Edison? They got a lot of problems.
Well, I think everyone's still waiting to see who's going to pick up the tab for the last 16 months when there were two meters running. One of them was replacement energy, another one was the repairs that were underway and never came to fruition. And that's a tab that's $1.3 billion, more or less. And so that has yet to be decided, and Edison really isn't conceding anything yet in that battle, and it's going to depend on a lot of things. There's still investigations underway with safety regulators at the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and then the other piece of it is going to be here in California at the Utilities Commission, which is sort of keeping track of all these costs as they're still being passed through to customers, and deciding whether there's going to be a rebate or basically whether utility customers or investors are going to pay for that chunk.
What would the rebate be for?
So rebate would be for state law allows it, once a plant is no longer producing electricity, it can only keep passing through costs for so much time before the state starts to decide these issues of who's responsible and how much the utility customer can reasonably pick up. And then there's all these accruing costs they were doing a lot of assessments and hired consultants and lawyers to try and figure out how they could restart the plant. And that's the plan that would have restarted one reactor that apparently seemed to have less damage to it at limited power, hoping to sort of temporarily resolve things while they come up with a permanent solution. And that ultimately ran into some tough regulatory issues. Semi-autonomous atomic safety and licensing board basically didn't buy in that was going to be a real solution, and they wanted some further review and some more studies done about it, and said that it also should go ahead and include rewriting the plant's safety plan, and that would require the opportunity for public hearings. So that was when, apparently, according to Edison statements, they decided that was going to take too much of a delay, drag them in the next year or even longer, and they decided to cut their losses, so to speak.
Morgan Lee again, Energy and Green Business Reporter for the UT in San Diego. John White is Executive Director of the Center for Energy Efficiency and Renewable Technologies in Sacramento. And John White, good to have you on our program.
Hi, Warren. Thanks for having me.
The nuclear industry, and the NRC in particular, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, has taken a lot of heat over the years for being too easy on the various plants and not providing sufficient oversight or tough enough regulations. Is this an unusual situation? Is this anomalous as far as the history of nuclear power is concerned?
Well, I think it stands out because of the size of the plant and the amount of the money and the fact that the plant ended up closing so soon after a major capital investment. So I think it's a pretty unique set of circumstances, but most of these plants are unique in the way they're designed and operated. I think the other thing about it is that the criticism of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission perhaps caused them to be more cautious and more thoughtful in evaluating this situation than might have been earlier the case.
And the capital investment was the replacement of generators, which turned out to have the tubes that didn't work the way they were supposed to. They vibrated too much.
Yes, and the new investment ended up shortening the life of the plant. But the larger reason, I think, for the plant being shut down is that it's simply out of the money, that the cost of operating the plant, the cost of the safety upgrades, and the cost of the return on capital is simply greater than the available alternatives.
I want to get back to you on the question of what this means for the future of nuclear power. But first, here's Michael Hiltzik. He's a business columnist for the Los Angeles Times. Always good to have you on our program.
It's my pleasure to be here.
You've written a column about who ought to pay for all of this, and it's going to be an awful lot of money. You say the answer is easy.
Well, it is easy. I think Edison would have a very high bar to reach to make a claim that it's not responsible, certainly for the fiasco over the design and the installation of these faulty new steam generators, which essentially broke the plant. Now, that's $700 million right there. That's clearly money that shareholders should pay for, not ratepayers. But there are going to be other questions that are all going to end up in the PUC's lap, and that includes not only the fact that Edison does have to acquire replacement energy for what it's going to lose by shutting San Onofre, but how prudent is it in buying that replacement energy? Is it doing the best it can to get these electrons at the best price? And if it's not, who's going to pay for the discrepancies? So I don't think there's much chance that ratepayers are going to end up to pay for the hardware that was faulty. In fact, Edison has admitted that it had oversight over every stage of the design and installation. In fact, they kept saying that their oversight was intrusive, which I think is a term of art, that they made sure that Mitsubishi didn't do anything they were aware of. So they're it on that, certainly on that. Then there are going to be questions about the excess decommissioning charges or costs that are going to be incurred because this plant is being decommissioned as much as 20 years prematurely. So that's going to make the whole process lengthier and more expensive.
It was expected to have a much longer life than, in fact, it has. John White, back to you in Sacramento. The chairman of the Public Utilities Commission is Mike Peavy. He was once the chair of the board of Southern California Edison.
I believe he was the president.
Or president. I beg your pardon. He was the president. Should he recuse himself from this?
I think that's a matter for him and the commission and the governor to discuss. I think more importantly than just the question of who pays is what are we going to do to replace the power, and how do we get that done with the least environmental impact possible while keeping the lights on. And I think the good news is there are significant opportunities to advance energy efficiency, demand response, distributed generation, and renewable power along with transmission. So I think the past needs to be investigated and will be so, and there'll be a lot of opinions, but I think the most important question is what are we going to do going forward, and how do we replace this power in the most reliable, cost-effective, and environmentally sound manner?
Gary Hedrick is a co-founder of San Clemente Green. That's a local grassroots organization working to address safety problems at the San Onofre reactors. They also work on other environmental issues in the area, which certainly will come up as the replacement power question is addressed. Gary Hedrick, good to have you on our program.
Thank you very much.
First of all, are you happy to see the plant closed down?
Yes, I can't express the joy that our whole group felt knowing that the possibility of restarting a defective reactor and just running it at 70% as an experiment, that option is off the table, and they made the right decision, even if it was based on economics. Our concern was always from a point of view of safety, and we're greatly relieved. I can't tell you how good that makes us all feel.
How concerned are you about what the nature of the replacement power might be, especially with regard to transmission lines? My understanding is that it's a hot summer. If they put more electricity in the lines than they're good for, they could be a risk in places where forest fires are likely.
Right. That's a concern, and that's the biggest part of that is we've already gone through one summer without any really downside, no blackouts. People were very responsible about the way they used energy more conservatively, and if we're called on to do that, we can easily save 10% of our energy use just by being conscientious about leaving lights on and simple things like that.
What about losing 1,000 jobs? What does that mean in the community?
Well, we've always been on the side of labor and concerned about the workers. In fact, that's how we got involved, is workers that felt an obligation for the public to know about problems there came to us first. So we have a close relationship with workers there, and we're concerned that Edison treats them fairly. And I also think there's a lot of jobs in the decommissioning process that will take at least another decade.
There's the decommissioning, which means essentially shutting the plant down, but many parts of it are extraordinarily radioactive, and of course the nuclear waste is as radioactive, at least at the moment, as anything on the planet. How concerned are you, given the record of Southern California Edison, that they're going to be able to handle that well?
Well, I'm very concerned that it's going to be delayed, and you know, cost considerations may compromise the process to some degree. So that's the next step for our group, is to really be good watchdogs on the process, make sure that the spent fuel, which is actually mostly in pools, gets transferred to a dry cask storage system, and that will protect us most likely from the big earthquake. So if we can't do that before the big earthquake, we could have a much bigger problem than even a meltdown of the core.
It could take 10 years to transfer to the dry cask, couldn't
it? Our calculations is it might take 5 years.
5 years, okay.
But we have to move pretty quickly to achieve that goal. And the geologists have told us that there's 90% certainty that we'll get the next big earthquake within 30 years, and that's maybe 5 years ago they were saying that. So every year is precious, and we just have to get it done before a big earthquake.
Gary Hydrick again with San Clemente Green. Back to John White, again, Executive Director of the Center for Energy Efficiency and Renewable Technologies in Sacramento. Elaborate a bit, if you will, on the availability of alternative fuels, especially renewable fuels. Is this an opportunity to start building yet more solar facilities than we already have? California is beginning to set records in that regard.
Yes, but there's also opportunities with other resources and technologies. In particular, the geothermal resources in Imperial County are a natural fit to replace this power, because the geothermal is a baseload resource, runs all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and also has the ability to provide mechanical inertia, which is needed for the system. So one of the ideas that I think is being discussed is to build some transmission from Imperial over to San Onofre or into the grid to strengthen the transmission system to enable us to access those resources in Imperial. There's also opportunities for demand response. And as the gentleman from San Clemente mentioned, customers voluntarily and in coordination with the utility to change their power consumption habits in a way that helps us minimize the power consumption at particular times is very important. And then also continuing to expand our regional renewable development, both in California and in neighboring states such as New Mexico and even Wyoming, all of which could together give us a combination of resources, a portfolio, if you will, that could help meet our needs while minimizing greenhouse gas emissions and reliance on natural gas.
Back to Michael Hiltzik, the business columnist for the Los Angeles Times. You said a moment ago that essentially Edison itself and Mitsubishi broke the plant by the effort they made to install new generators. How confident are you that there's sufficient oversight of the company now to take care of all of these very dangerous situations that we've been talking about?
Well, there's no question that this whole situation is going to really put pressure on our regulators, both at the state level and the federal level. And I think the NRC at the federal level certainly has come under a lot of criticism, typically deserved criticism for the way it oversees the nuclear industry. There's going to be a lot of eyes on this situation over the next 5, 10, 20, 30, really 40 years that it's going to take to fully decommission this plant. At the same time, the PUC is going to be under really a spotlight as to how it undertakes the effort of apportioning costs. We mentioned Michael Peavy, who was a former president of Edison. I think he is making the case that that was a long time ago. It was something in the neighborhood of 20 years ago. After that, he went and he started a company that was a competitor to Edison, and he's been a public servant and a utility commissioner for years since then. So people are going to be keeping an eye on him, looking for any sign that there's undue favoritism to Edison. But this is really all in the regulators' laps right now. And so the question is not only is the management of Edison up to the job of handling all this, but are our regulators up to the job? And that's going to be a very fraught issue over the next many years.
John White, another point about the decommissioning, if it takes 40 years, and the waste that is sitting there. Originally, when nuclear power was first developed, the idea of decommissioning a plant was that you'd actually take it apart and haul it off to a place where nuclear waste was stored for everybody. No such place has been set up by the Congress. There doesn't seem to be any likelihood that there will be one. So is it then quite likely that there will be radioactive material sitting there at San Onofre for a long time to come?
Yes, and that's why the gentleman's suggestion about the urgency of moving the spent fuel from the liquid ponds into dry cask storage is a very high priority. We need to secure that fuel as quickly as possible and then anticipate that we will have to store it on site for a considerable amount of time, which is why priority should be given to the safety with which that storage is managed.
Morgan Lee at UT San Diego, we haven't talked about your area at all. San Diego has a utility that is a part owner of San Onofre. Do you see the same kinds of energy issues and even environmental issues there?
Certainly. It's interesting. Today, San Diego Gas and Electric, which is the publicly traded investor-owned utility for Southern Orange County and San Diego, they announced that they are going to revive an application for a third party to build a 300-megawatt natural gas peaker plant. This was a plant that was rejected by the PUC in March, and the PUC at the time said, look, we're going to give all the parties involved in this, there are a lot of interveners on the consumer advocacy and green energy side, we're going to give you 2-3 years to come up with other solutions, be it rooftop solar or conservation or storage, and if you don't get it together, we're going to have to take a fresh look at this. Well, it looks like that's all been sped up. SDG&E is going to push forward with that application. They say they need it because Songs is now out of the picture for their long-term planning needs, and that they need baseload power or local, quick fire power, I should say, inside the pocket here to be able to draw in transmission and all these utility scale projects that are being built out in the desert. So that debate was jump started today.
So, John White, quickly, we're almost out of time, but natural gas, while cleaner than coal and oil, is not a renewable fuel. Would you at the Center for Energy Efficiency and Renewable Technologies be opposed to a natural gas peaker plant?
Well, we think of baseload natural gas is the worst thing that we could build, but that there may be some limited places and limited amounts of building a quick start, fast ramp, a low utilization plant that would be there to fill in the gaps. I think, small, targeted and specific location gas plants that don't run very much but are there when needed to fill in a gap will play a role. But the key is to not overbuild the gas when we have better alternatives available to us if we take the time to put them together.
All right. A lot of questions remain, obviously. It's a hugely complex situation with the shutting down of the nuclear power plant at San Onofre. Thank you all very much. John White in Sacramento, Michael Hiltzik with the Los Angeles Times, Gary Hydrick at San Clemente Green, and Morgan Lee at UT San Diego. Thanks to our earlier guest, Stephen Conroy, Communications Director with Southern California Edison. Good to have all of you on our program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Remember, you can join the conversation on our Which Way LA Facebook page.